Radio Gorgeous, podcasts for women.
Right, you goddesses, girls. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you.
We have back again, returning to Radio Gorgeous, Liz Foley and Beth Coates, who were the authors of What Would Boudica Do? And they have now published You Goddess. Tell us about You Goddess.
Well, it's a playful book, I guess, about revisiting goddesses from all around the world, and a little bit as we did in What Would Boudica Do, we're sort of looking at them through the prism of dilemmas and issues that face modern women today, and seeing if these incredible sisters from the past can teach us anything. And it turns out they can.
And one of the things that I thought it was an interesting starting point from the book is sort of reclaiming goddesses by writing about them as women. Liz, if you want to tell us a bit about that.
So that was something that we were really interested in doing, because both of us have really loved mythology and read books of myths from when we were really young. But at some point, it obviously dawned on us that, you know, there's a lot of kind of passive sort of female depictions, all quite damaging stereotypes that are drawn from ideas of goddesses, certainly in the Greco-Roman myths, which are the ones that we were familiar with. And so that kind of informed us on two levels, because first of all, we wanted to get outside the Greco-Roman myths and find out about all of the other amazing mythologies and religions that there are that have goddesses who we didn't know so much about, but we should know about. And that was one of the great joys of it. But also because all of these stories have generally been told by men, because of the ways that women have been excluded from education and excluded from platforms of communication. And we really wanted to take a kind of modern, kind of humorous feminist slant on some of these stories. And so we picked the stories we thought were most kind of useful to modern women, and gave us the most grounds for reinterpretation or for just looking at things from a different angle.
Okay, so in that prism, can we start talking about Athena?
Yes, absolutely. So Athena is the first goddess in the book, because she's obviously an all-star. Everybody knows about Athena, goddess of wisdom and war. But we talk about her in relation to the idea of strong women and what it means to be a strong woman. And how actually Athena is quite often held up. She's one of the most popular goddesses because she does have genuine kind of power and wisdom and traits that certainly at the time where she was worshipped were considered to be male traits. You know, she's in charge of shipbuilding and metalwork and things that, you know, as a real mortal woman, she would not have been involved in. But we talk about how it's interesting even today that when we talk about heroines in films or TV shows who are, you know, people refer to as strong women, quite often they also have masculine attributes. So there's still this idea that masculinity equals strength and anything feminine is weak. And so Athena really plays into that. And the fact that she, her birth story is that she's born directly from the father of from her father's forehead, from Zeus's forehead, without any female being involved at all, is sort of a sign that literally wisdom and war come from men and are only a male thing. And she's wearing armor, and she's, you know, and we're all for the fact that she quite happily punches other gods, and she's, you know, feisty, and she is the goddess of war. But there is something about the idea that the shadow she casts on more feminine goddesses and the idea, and women, and the idea that they can't equally be strong because they aren't as masculine in the way that they express. So, yeah, we thought she was quite an interesting one from that point of view.
Another interesting aspect about her, and another negative aspect attributed to strong women, for instance, like Margaret Thatcher, that she wasn't a woman's woman. And you use the example that in the Oresteia, you know, Orestes had to kill his mother because his mother killed his father. And then, you know, Apollo comes after him and says, you know, and eggs him on to kill his mother. Well, then, and says, oh, I'll take care of it. Don't worry. And then, of course, the Furies are not, you know, and Apollo's like a new young upstart god. And the Furies are the old ancient gods. And so it's like young versus old. And Athena actually comes down on the side of Apollo, and she forgives Orestes. So tell me about that, because that is like that whole stereotype too.
Yes, There's quite a lot of that in with Athena's stories as well, because she's with her, one of the famous stories of her and Arachne, who was someone who was equally or nearly as good at weaving as her, and she became offended by this, and she turned Arachne into a spider, which is where we have the word arachnid and all of that from. So she quite frequently does not support the sisterhood, and I think this is part of the reason why she is sort of cast as this. She gets to be friends with all the great heroes of Greek mythology because she's a man's woman, and there is this idea that she's a man's woman. You can trust her if you're a bloke, but you know, not maybe so much if you are a woman, and certainly a mortal woman. But to be fair, most of the Greek gods are pretty terrible to mortal women.
I describe them as like sort of teenagers with superpowers. They're petty, jealous. I mean, so what? The bitch was better at weaving than you. Like, let it go, you know? Whatever. Let it lie.
Medusa as well.
Yes, so Medusa again. Medusa gets raped, and then because she's in Athena's temple, and because of that, Athena has her made into Medusa with the famous snaky hair. So, you know, she's just not. But it's interesting what you say about the Furies and how they're these kind of old, bonic kind of goddesses, as opposed to the new Olympians, which is a more male and kind of, you know, I always think of them as kind of politicians and, you know, mm-hmm. they're kind of fancy and new.
New Labour!
Yeah, exactly. One of the things we found in the book was that a lot of the goddesses we were learning about have this really wild, dark past. And it's not as sanitised as the beautiful, gorgeous goddess that you think of when you think of the word.
Yeah, and that seemed to me to be particularly true when you move away from the Greco-Roman myths, don't you think, Liz?
Yeah,
as soon as you get into the more ancient ones, even that these goddesses begin to encapsulate not just the kind of ideals of femininity
and fertility. So Inanna was one of Beth's favourites, isn't she?
Yeah, so she's this great Sumerian goddess who actually we came across her from a figure from what would Buddha could do, and Hedyuana, who's a priestess in ancient Sumerian culture. So she's the very first recorded writer, male or female. And she was one of Inanna's devotees. So she wrote all these amazing hymns and poems to Inanna. So we felt she had to be in our goddess book as well. But she's great because she represents, yes, she does represent sex and fertility, but she also represents politics and war and fighting and destruction. And that felt to us like a really powerful image of a.
We do her on ambition, don't we?
Yes, we write about her on ambition, exactly. And about how, you know, when ambitious women are, again, you know, in our current kind of stereotyped currently as being, again, dangerous or frightening, but actually there's something to be said about embracing your Inanna side and being ambitious and not being afraid of it.
I think that's a really great way forward, because a couple of years ago, someone got into, I forget her name, but she got into a lot of trouble saying, you know, women should use their sexuality at work, as if men don't, you know, and people were like, oh, then no, they shouldn't. I'm like, of course, use everything you've got. And part of what you have is dark. Part of what you have is sex. Part of what you have, you know, bring everything to the table. You know, that's what the goddesses do. They're bringing like a big dragnet of the dark, the ugly, the creative, the gorgeous. You know, you can't have life without death. And bring it. Absolutely.
Yeah, we think that about them, actually, is the fact that writing about women, essentially female characters who are, by their very nature, powerful, it was quite sort of inspiring and invigorating to be solely focused on those subjects.
Oh, that's fun. So did focusing on these powerful goddesses, did that have an effect on you personally?
Yeah, I think it did, actually. I can think of one example that I definitely took as a like actual piece of advice from the book. So we write about Baba Yaga, who's a Russian sort of Slavic she's a witch really, but she's amazing. She lives in this, she's terrifying and lives in this really gruesome kind of grand design in the woods, which is a sort of house on chicken legs that moves around and it's garlanded with skulls. She absolutely refuses to be again pigeonholed. And in one of the sections we write about, you know, taking that advice of not saying sorry all the time. And one of the things that I've really started doing is I actually edit the word sorry out of any email I write. So I look at it, and if I've written sorry, I'll find a way to rephrase it. And it's actually, it's very liberating to sort of say, you know, normally I'd go, oh, sorry, I didn't attach the thing to the document. Instead, you'll say, I didn't attach the thing to the document, I'm sending it now. And that just changes the whole kind of tone of what you were saying and how you're saying it. And yeah, that's been my personal bit of advice from the book.
Have you noticed that less apologetic stance cuts through a lot of stuff? Because I find if I start out with an apologetic stance, you know, and you say, oh, sorry, someone steps, you know, very English thing. Someone steps on your foot, you say sorry, and they're like, yeah. And you're like, hey, wait a minute, you can't take that sorry. That was, you know, I was just saying that. You know, you're stealing that. But you've stepped into that apologetic stance, and someone's going to say, okay, yeah, fine.
Well, exactly, and you're setting a slightly different tone to a correspondence where you're not immediately starting off on the back foot. And I don't know, I think it's a more powerful stance, and it feels like that to me. It feels that when you're sending those kind of emails.
Fantastic.
We also had that from when we did What Would Boudicca Do, is that reading those examples of those women and how they kind of confronted boundaries and typical ideas of what a woman should be. I mean, that's a lot of what You Goddess is about, is ideas of what women should be that society still holds, even after centuries and centuries, that actually aren't helpful to women. And some of them are inspiring examples, and those ones are great. That's great if, you know, they can help women forward. But a lot of them are about being, you know, ideas of being nice and friendly and helping people and all of that. And obviously those are all great things. But I think sometimes women sort of focus on that too much to the expense of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so another goddess I wanted to ask you about was, and I don't know if I will pronounce this correctly, Uzumi?
Yes. The Shinto goddess of the dawn. Yeah, she's a great one. I love her because actually we wrote this book before lockdown and everything. But actually we do her on learning to laugh at yourself and the power of humour. And one of the things we talk about in that chapter is how laughing just is very good for your health, not just your mental health, but also your kind of physical health. And she's got a great story because she, the goddess of the sun in the particular myth that she's in, is offended by her brother, and she goes and hides in a cave. And obviously when the sun disappears, the earth kind of stops growing and all of these monsters come out and all the other gods are very upset. And Uzume is the one who manages to bring her out of the cave, which is why she's the goddess of the dawn. But the way she manages to do this is she sets up a little platform outside the cave, and she essentially does a striptease kind of cabaret dance, and it makes all the other gods laugh. And it's the sound of other people laughing and wanting to get in on the joke, which is what makes the sun goddess come out and bring back life to the world. And it's just a very heartening story about not taking yourself too seriously, but also just about the power of laughter and of humor and happiness.
And also that gods and goddesses can feel FOMO.
Yes, exactly.
But there's a thing as well, isn't there, really, about like women being funny is kind of, I mean, it's changing now, but it's been for a long time. It was rare to see a woman stand-up comedian or, you know, a woman writing comedy for TV. It was always men. And again, it's something quite powerful about putting a woman with humor front and center.
Okay, so now tell me, who are the goddesses? Because you had them at your beck and call. So who were the goddesses that you thought of most during lockdown?
I'm going to say the Selkie wife. She's one that I think of, and this is going to sound a bit mean on my family, but anyway. they're these sort of shape-shifting creatures from Scotland, and there's a brilliant story about this young man who is he turns down all the local women and says he doesn't want to get married to anybody. He believes women are... He always harks back to the story of Adam and Eve and says men are better on their own. And the Selkies are these kind of shape-shifting, seal-like creatures, but when they come ashore, they get rid of their seal skin, and they are very, very beautiful, and they seem to bewitch men and women. Anyway, he's walking down the beach one day, and he creeps up on this group of Selkies sunbathing on a rock, and he steals one of them's seal coat, she has to come with him, essentially. They end up getting married. He won't give the coat back to her, so she has to live with him. They get married, they have four children, and they, from the outside, have this kind of perfect marriage. But it's said that when she sings, animals stop feeding and children stop playing. It's quite grim. So there's obviously a sadness there. Anyway, she tricks there's one day where her children are down picking cockles on the beach, and she tricks the one daughter who's been left behind into telling her where the seal skin is. And she just throws it on, immediately heads out to sea without a sort of second look, not saying goodbye even to her family. And there was something, again, I found really powerful in that. Maybe this is 5 months of being locked down with my family. But it was this idea that she, at the very first opportunity she was given, she rejects this kind of gilded cage that that has been built for her. And I thought of her.
I love that, Beth. That's absolutely, because I absolutely have the feeling of just slipping through the waves and I'm off. No thought for the next moment, just now, away. And Beth, Liz, how about you?
Well, there are a few, actually. It was funny because, as I say, we wrote it before any of this, but there are a few that actually seem particularly resonant now. So we write about an Aboriginal Australian ancestor spirits called the Wawalak sisters on the subject of resilience. And we also have a Gallo-Roman goddess called Epona, who's a horse goddess. And we talk about her and adaptability, because she was this Gaulish goddess, essentially, who then became adopted through the spread of the Roman kind of empire. She actually, instead of being subjugated, she became really popular with the Roman cavalry, because she was this horse goddess and horses were so important. And so her cult actually spread really, like there's an inscription about her on Hadrian's Wall. So she spread right to the edges of the Roman empire, even though she's essentially not a Roman goddess at all. And is part of the, you know, part of the their colonization, but came to kind of greater strength because of the fact that she adapted to be something that the Romans could celebrate as well. So she's also been on my mind. Probably the most prominent one though is an Inuit goddess called Sedna, who we talk about in relation to self-care. And again, it's a little bit similar to what Beth was saying. It's about kind of taking time for yourself and making sure that you're looking after yourself in amongst looking after other people, and, you know, balancing that kind of, because Sedna's story is one of balancing duty and responsibility with her own kind of happiness and fulfillment.
So, and also there was one that I see here, the Morrigan. Can you tell me about the Irish goddess, the Morrigan?
So the Morrigan, she's actually one of my favorites. So she is, she's an Irish goddess, again, a goddess of war, and she is like full goth kind of horror movie. She appears as a raven. She eats the entrails of people fall on the battlefield. She spends a lot of time winding up Cuchulainn, who is the kind of central hero of the Ulster cycle of poems. And she also in some ways helps him. So she's one of those goddesses where there's the dark and the light, and she's really in herself. She's like fully wearing black, absolutely dark. But she is also kind of a goddess who, you know, what we found again in a lot of these goddesses' stories is that you get to be death and you get to be life. You know, they're the goddesses of both sides of that coin. And she's certainly one of those. She's just, yeah, she's really good fun, the Morrigan.
Sure.
Not have to feel like they should be nice all the time.
I was going to say, I'm thinking you should be conjuring her. We should all be conjuring her. I've given you, especially when approaching children, I've given you life. I can give you death. No, 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 no. This isn't just the second book you've worked on together. You both work together. You work in the same publishing house. But also, you know, so as this writing partnership, how has that developed and changed? And what's next for you guys?
Well, it started, I mean, it's actually our sixth. We started with a framework of grown-ups when we were both assistants working in a publishing house. Actually, in the same publishing house that we're in. It was about kind of trying to teach ourselves all the stuff that we'd forgotten at school. But, you know, that was a sort of dream to write, because we essentially, you know, we were young and single and had no kids, and we'd come into the office every weekend and sit side by side typing out the words, every word together, and then going and having curry. It was heaven, wasn't it? And that is so not the case now. We have to, like, you know, we've both got other divide the subjects up, the chapters up, and then we very heavily edit each other, which is that's the most fun bit, actually. I love being edited by them, and I also really enjoy editing those. And hopefully what you get in the final thing is one sort of seamless voice, so you wouldn't know who'd written each chapter. Is that how you feel about it, Robin?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's definitely changed over the time, but I still really, I mean, both of us, I think, we write our books in order to learn about the things that we're writing about. Like, that's the thing we really love, is the research and the learning. And this was just one of the most enjoyable, You Goddess was one of the most enjoyable books to research, so, yeah.
We could have spent years and years and years researching it, couldn't we? We spent a lot of time thinking it was sort of unending.
You other goddess too. All right, and also, can you give a shout out to Georgia Perry, who did the gorgeous illustrations?
Yes, we were so lucky to have Georgia do the pictures, because she's really done that thing we were talking about, having a modern kind of feminist, you know, view of what these figures are, and the pictures are just gorgeous.
Yeah, they just pop off the page as powerfully as the goddesses. Anyway, thank you so much. I am so excited to delve into World of Goddesses, and I've always loved the myths, and just to have it exclusively goddesses, and then from all parts of the globe and time and places, it's sort of, you've brought them back to life for us.
Radio Gorgeous, podcasts for women.